In an astonishing maneuver, Todd Phillips, heretofore known as the director of the Hangover trilogy of idiot comedy films, reconstructs the films of Martin Scorsese. Phillips uses a comic book origin story, that of the Joker, Batman's nemesis, as a conceptual Trojan horse, resulting in a terrific film about the horrors of life in the United States in 2019, not a hero in sight, super or otherwise. In his 1967 student film The Big Shave, Scorsese's five-minute music video, a young man cuts his face with a razor. As blood begins pouring down his chest, he slits his throat. Rather than dying, he comically dabs his face to put the finishing touches on his ablutions. In one of the most profoundly intelligent end title cards in all of cinema, Scorsese credits the film's whiteness to Herman Melville and signs it Viet 67. In Joker, Scorsese's performance art is replicated in Joaquin Phoenix embodying a similarly self-destructive violent man. We see his body in motion, contorted and emaciated. We see him dance in the streets, in shots that derive from 1976 Taxi Driver's reworking of German Expressionism. In his 1947 book, From Caligari to Hitler, Siegfried Krakauer sees in Weimar cinema a society in such deep trouble that its apotheosis is the rise of fascism. Krakauer performed this criticism in retrospect. Phillips's does its similar work in the midst of Trump's horror show. By linking whiteness to Herman Melville, 30 years before literary theorist Valerie Babb's excellent essay on the subject, Scorsese in The Big Shave calls attention to the disconnect between the antiseptic bathroom, its white tile sparkling, and the messy bloodbath in Vietnam. This is one possible explanation for the ending of Joker, wherein we see Arthur Fleck exit his social worker's room, leaving behind a trail of bloody footprints on the antiseptic floors of the Arkham Asylum. Given her status as an African-American woman, it's logical to assume that Joker is the embodiment of white Trump supporters' rage at non-white America. With The Big Shave as a reading frame, it's also possible that the film's unreliable narrator has once again misled us. The footprints might not be evidence left behind from another murder, but Scorsese's experimental film's collision of an American mythology of cleanliness rent asunder by the nation's bloody reality. Just before the ending in Arkham, Phillips presents the murder of Bruce Wayne's parents in front of the Monarch Theater. With Joker arrested in the back of a police car, another criminal, perhaps Jack Napier from Tim Burton's 1988 film, kills the Waynes. The connection to the superhero movie comes too little too late, making us fundamentally question whether the city of Gotham can possibly survive the chaos that Joker has so quickly produced, long enough to let little Bruce emerge from his vigilante chrysalis to don his bat wings. The marquee above the theater lists two films, Zorro the Gay Blade and Blowout. In the latter, Brian De Palma absurdly remakes Michelangelo Antonioni's international art film Blow Up, with John Travolta as a sound recordist who accidentally acquires evidence of a plot to assassinate the president. In the former, George Hamilton plays the masked Avenger Zorro and his heretofore unknown gay brother, Bunny Wigglesworth. Both titles shift the temporal location of Batman from its original 1939 context to 1981, the year of triumph of the neoconservative revolution and the inauguration of Ronald Reagan. In that political environment, the Waynes either took their son to see a ridiculous Hollywood comedy worse than The Hangover, or a derivative bastardization of Scorsese's Taxi Driver. Released in December 1980, the Scorsese film that the Waynes should have seen is Raging Bull. It is the absence of that Scorsese film in Joker, not the presence of the others, that offers the best insight. Shorn of media images carefully attending to the dangers of white working class masculinity, failed liberalism led to criminal chaos and vigilantism. What film images were the last the Waynes' parents experienced, we can only speculate. We know only two things for sure. Their liberal philanthropy did Arthur Fleck no good, and their parenting of young Bruce was disastrous even before their untimely death. While they watched the flickers, bulls raged in the streets.
In interpreting the film Joker, it is useful to know that director Todd Phillips's previous film credits include the Hangover trilogy. The Hangover films, like Joker, were elaborate and indulgent spectacles of contemporary masculinity. In these films, we witnessed a group of men go off the rails in a series of improbable misadventures. with a flippant disdain for adulthood and a grudging acceptance of the women in their lives, the men of the Hangover films played their clumsiness and unwillingness to engage with reality to laughs. Joker, though, is no comedy. Arthur Fleck, the troubled man who gradually transforms into the monstrous Joker, is a dark take on the crisis of masculinity in contemporary US American society. The result is a film which has some competent artistic flourishes and obvious homages to classic cinema portraying violent masculinity, but offers little in the form of nuanced social commentary or ideological analysis. Joker is an origin story of the notorious villain associated with the Batman comics and films. Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker retains the theatrics and menace of the actors who have played the character in earlier films, the most famous examples being Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight Rises and Jack Nicholson in the 1989 Batman film. However, Phoenix plays the part in a startlingly visceral manner that makes his villainy far more innate and frightening. The hyena-like laughs and the impossible contortions of Phoenix's emaciated body make Arthur Fleck a complex persona, evoking both sympathy and repulsion. Phoenix's performance as the Joker is powerful acting, but it does not distract from the fact that the politics of the film are dealt with in a rather weak manner. The film is also the story of a disadvantaged white man with debilitating mental health issues who is all but ignored by the state. He watches with anger as the elite of Gotham City, most notably the ultra-wealthy Thomas Wayne, accrue power at the expense of the city's lower-class majority. His anger, marginalized status, and a contrived scene which gets him easy access to a gun combine to turn him into a violent, amoral murderer. With this background, it is impossible to presume that director Phillips was not also offering a tangential commentary on our times. The Joker is successful in starting a whole movement of anarchy and vandalism in Gotham City, in which other angry white men like him participate in protest against the elite. And here lies the blind spot of the film. On the one hand, the film aligns the Joker with the politics of social justice movements against the elite, but on the other hand, draws from profiles of mass shooters to create the backstory of Arthur Fleck. The film is provocative in its depiction of mindless violence, but then that is the culture we live in. Ours is a hyper-visual culture that unendingly validates violence and other extreme acts on social media. We might watch such videos in awe or disapproval, but we still watch, mistaking our reaction for response. In the Hangover films, the actions of the protagonists always had hilarious consequences, but those were scrapes that they eventually got out of. At the end of each film in the trilogy, order was restored as the men went back into their mundane lives. The world of the Joker offers no such recourse. This is only the beginning. The acts of the Joker we already know are going to get much worse and much more depraved. Perhaps this is why Joker is a rather mediocre original story, providing unsatisfactory logic to the irrationality of extreme villainy.